American Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. President Bush says Iraq is now the central front in the so-called war on terror. And in addressing the nation last night, Mr. Bush said he'll soon ask Congress for $87 billion more for the post-war transformation in Iraq and the ongoing reconstruction of Afghanistan. More from reporter Terry Moore.
In a speech to the nation from the White House, President Bush argued that the terror war will continue to be difficult and costly, yet worthy of the nation and critical to U.S. security. With tensions and casualties rising in Iraq, the president blamed backers of ousted Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein and terrorist groups coming into Iraq.
The terrorists have a strategic goal. They want us to leave Iraq before our work is done. They want to shake the will of the civilized world.
The president said the U.S. will continue new efforts to get more international help in post-war Iraq. I'm Terry Moore in Washington.
Britain, meanwhile, is now sending an extra 2,200 troops to Iraq. Defense Secretary Jeff Hoon made the announcement following continuing attacks on coalition forces in the Gulf country. Correspondent Suzanne Chislett has details from London.
Prime Minister Tony Blair's official spokesman says this latest deployment is a detailed, targeted response to recent attacks in Iraq. Britain had pulled out about two-thirds of the force it had in the country during the conflict, but the government is keen to stress the decision to send fresh troops is not a knee-jerk response. Soldiers from the 2nd Battalion, the Light Infantry, and 1st Battalion, the Royal Green Jackets, will be deployed in the coming weeks. There are already around 10,000 British forces in Iraq. Suzanne Chislett, London.
To U.S. Soldiers in Baghdad, meanwhile, have been injured after an explosive was apparently detonated on a bridge. It happened as a convoy was crossing that bridge, which is in the central part of Baghdad. Meanwhile, in Tikrit, in northern Iraq, four suspected guerrillas were reportedly arrested by U.S. troops in several overnight raids. The commander of the 4th Infantry Division there says the raids are yielding information on how Saddam Hussein has managed to stay hidden.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking... you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat has now reportedly tapped his parliamentary speaker to replace former Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas. But Ahmed Koray says he wants guarantees from the United States and Europe before he commits to taking the job. Abbas resigned over the weekend, saying he did not have enough international support to garner peace in the Middle East. Koray says, quote, "I want to see whether peace is possible or not." Koray is considered a Palestinian moderate and was a principal architect of the now-failed 1993 Oslo Peace Accord.
Oh, 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 ice cold milk and an Oreo cookie. They forever go together with a classic combination. When a dark, delicious cookie meets an icy cold sensation, like the one and only creamy, crunchy chocolate Oreo keeps your milk from getting lonely. Oh, 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 the one and only.
Only Oreo in classic or chocolate cream.
Oh, oh, oh.
German newspaper says Iran has offered to exchange al-Qaeda suspects in its custody for Iranian opposition leaders in exile in the United States. The German Weekly says Tehran has actually proposed that swap several times. More from Middle East correspondent Roxana Saberi.
The newspaper quotes German and Iranian intelligence services as saying Iran wanted the deal to be kept secret. Tehran also reportedly wanted to include as a condition its removal from Washington's Axis of Evil list of countries that support terrorism. But the newspaper said U.S. authorities did not accept the offer, even though it had received several such offers between last October and this February, some using Germany as an intermediary. Iran says it has arrested and extradited around 500 members of the al-Qaeda group. Tehran has said it is holding both key and less important members of the terrorist network, though it has refused to name them. Iran's foreign ministry has said detainees in Iran would stand trial in Iran if they have acted against Iran's national security. Roxana Saberi, Tehran.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Cucumbers, jazz, Gwyneth Paltrow, and khakis. Speaking of cool things, how's your vehicle's cooling system stacking up for the summer? Don't sweat it. When I come back, I'll tell you how to chill out. We've all seen the Tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first until we tested 6 Tornado units. And in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your Tornado unit today. Or visit TornadoAir.com. It's hot, and you're working hard. You can't go another foot till you cool off. Aha, now you know how your car feels. In fact, overheating's the number one cause of breakdowns. Like our bodies have a cooling system, cars do too. They rely on radiators to keep their engines from boiling over. To properly cool, these systems must be maintained with correct proportions and levels of coolant water mixture. So this summer, think cool, calm, and collect the money saved by radiator check. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to our program, broadcasting live coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network. This is Tom Hartman. We're also available on the Sirius Satellite Stream 145 and on several internet radio stations, radiopower.org, live365.com, ieamericaradio.com. and WhiteRoseSociety.com, where you will find archives of the program. How far we have come, or how far we have fallen. I'm assuming that most of you, if you didn't watch the bizarre performance by George W. Bush yesterday on television, the last evening, you've at least heard the clips, but you really had to see the performance. The Washington Post this morning... The Washington Post. This is not CommonDreams.org or BuzzFlies. The Washington Post opens this story. President Bush on the high price of freedom. And I quote, "A worried-looking George W. Bush." And then they go on to say, "Consistently throughout the speech, Bush's eyes were glued to the prompting device attached to the camera, though he still kept turning the typed pages of text in front of him. And at first, he seemed to be reciting rather than talking. He was stiff and listless." He was, I saw him toward the end there crack his trademark smirk a few times. But I think that his handlers have taught him that what he thinks is a smile, looks like the look that I think most of the people on death row imagined was the look on his face when he heard that the switch was about to be pulled. You know, it's just this, it gives me chills, frankly. Yeah, I mean, I have seen genuine smiles on his face that are, and sometimes they catch him on camera and he really looks like a nice guy. But when he's giving his speeches, I don't know if it's his personality or his how he's been trained or what, but that's really the fluff. Let's talk about the substance. Let's talk about what actually happened. First of all, let's look back just 40 years in American history, and listen to a true leader about how America should respond in the world.
Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
Yes. And what we got last night was something quite different from that. It was sort of like, well, friends, we thought we could do this, and we seem to have put our foot on something that we weren't expecting, and it's now stuck to the bottom of our shoe, and we need the UN to help us out of it. New York Post ran an article yesterday called "The Sweet Smell of Panic." And this I think is a very legitimate concern. They know the hasty turn to the United Nations smells of panic, unwarranted panic at that, and even worse, the foolish subordination of Iraq policy to electoral concerns. See, here they're identifying what I think is what really motivated this thing. We know now from several different independent sources inside the White House and a lengthy story about Karl Rove in Vanity Fair last year, that this White House is more obsessed with polls than any has ever in the history of the United States. That they carefully, thoroughly, and methodically run polls on literally every single issue, every initiative, everything they're going to do, whether they're going to try and sneak it out the back door or however they're going to do it, they run polls on it to find out what's going on. They are obsessed with polling and with making policy based, to some extent, on polls, but more importantly, because they're making policy based on what their corporate donors are defining for them. The purpose of the poll is to figure out how to spin this thing. Well, if we call it, a program to allow polluting power plants to produce more pollution, should we call that a Clear Skies initiative? How does that fly? Or should we call it just a little more pollution initiative? Or, what should it be? And they carefully fine-tune this stuff. And these guys have figured out, this isn't rocket science. Only one commentator on all the different shows that I heard yesterday bothered to even mention it, but I think it's the key. And these guys know it, that if George W. can get the UN into Iraq and get the situation stabilized and get a democratic government there and get the oil pumping, regardless of its cost to America, if he can get that done by August or September of 2004, which is a year from now, which is an entirely plausible timeline, then he will easily be reelected in 2004, at least on the basis of that, assuming that the economy continues to get better, which it will. We've talked about this on this program a number of times. There are these business cycles. And when things get bad for a while, it just kind of wrings the fat out of the economy and provides lots and lots of opportunities. Most of the businesses that I've started in my life, I've started during economic recessions. It's a great time to start a business. Certainly the most successful businesses that Louise and I have started over the years we started when everybody else was crashing and burning. And then you just ride the cycle up. So there's that, plus this reduction of taxation on dividends. Dividends being when a corporation makes a profit, they pay out part of that profit to their stockholders, and that's called a dividend check. And now, if the corporation pays some of the money that they get to you as an employee, you have to pay income tax on it, and you have to pay payroll tax on it. But if instead of being an employee who works for a living with that corporation, you are the owner of that corporation or an owner of that corporation, that is to say a stockholder, and for a living you make your living sitting on your butt waiting for the profit checks to come in, the dividend checks, then under this new Bush tax bill, the new law that was just passed some months ago, your maximum tax rate is 15%, and you don't have to pay any payroll tax whatsoever. Now, the effect of that is going to be that a lot of people are going to start putting money back into the stock market just to get the dividends, even if the stock market doesn't go up. If you're making money and you're only paying 15% tax on it, that money is more precious than money that you pay 35% tax on. And, of course, when more people put their money into the stock market, the value of stocks goes up because it's a commodity that more people want, and the market will go up. So everybody was predicting when Bush cut the dividend taxes that the market would go up, and, of course, it will. And a lot of people are dumb enough to think that the market going up means the economy is getting better. I shouldn't say dumb enough. I mean, this is the myth that is spun by the cons and by the media. But anyhow, back to Iraq. But I digress. To go crawling back to the United Nations, tail between our legs, says Jonathan Foreman in the New York Post, the sixth smell of panic. Only a week after the Najaf bombing tells the world, and more importantly the people of Iraq, that the bombings and attacks on U.S. troops have succeeded. It signals that America is, if not exactly on the run, severely rattled. He quotes the Syrian dictator Hafez al-Assad after the Beirut disaster. You'll recall the Beirut bombing where Ronald Reagan just pulled our guys out. So that's it. Okay. 227 guys died. That's it. We're not going to fight that battle. And Assad said, the Americans are short of breath. And I think also any citizen of Iraq who's thinking of joining the newly formed Iraqi police department or the newly formed Iraqi army and looking around and seeing that so many of his fellow citizens are saying, hey, no, we're going to throw these guys out, is having serious second thoughts right now. And not only that, I mean, there are a lot of forces in that region that really don't want us to succeed, aside from those that we call our enemies. I would say that Saudi Arabia is terrified that we might succeed because they run one of the most oppressive, repressive, paranoid, right-wing, violent, dark ages kingdoms, dictatorships in the Middle East. And if we succeed in establishing anything that even resembles a democracy, keep in mind the only democracy in the Middle East is Israel. If we succeed in producing anything that remember 11 years ago, George Bush Sr. said that we were going into Kuwait so that they could have free and fair elections. We're still waiting. And the countries in this region do not want this to happen. They'll give us lip service, but... And this was all so obvious before we started. It was all so obvious before we started. So what's going on? What is this really all about? Why, you know, at times I just get speechless. Let's listen to George Bush for a moment while I catch my breath.
There's more at work in these attacks than blind rage. The terrorists have a strategic goal. They want us to leave Iraq.
Now, I'd like you to think about that for a minute. The terrorists have a strategic goal. I think, first of all, one of the worst mistakes, and this is, I think it was Wesley Clark was talking about this the other day. It might have been on Bill Maher's show. One of the biggest mistakes that this administration makes, and, of course, it's not a mistake from their point of view because it's their spin. But this administration and the faux news folks continually refer to anybody who attacks American troops in Iraq as terrorists. And that's not the definition of terrorism. The definition of terrorism is when you go after civilian populations in random and unpredictable ways to inflict terror. Look it up in any dictionary. These guys are not going after civilians. They're going after military. They're going after an occupying force. So, number one, small problem with language, but let's continue.
The terrorists have a strategic goal. They want us to leave Iraq before our work is done. They want to shake the will of the civilized world. In the past, the terrorists have cited the examples of Beirut and Somalia, claiming that if you inflict harm on Americans, we will run from a challenge.
Now, I would suggest it's not the terrorists who have pointed those out, although they have. And it's a good point, it's an important point, and it's one of the reasons why we can't now allow this thing to fail. But it's also why we shouldn't have gotten into it in the first place. You pick your battles carefully. But now that we're there, what are we going to do? How can we pull this together? And what's it going to cost? What is it going to cost in life and money? And what could we do with that money? And oh, I really it's where to go with this? There's so much. We'll dig into this in some considerable depth here. We're just skipping the surface right now. Right after this break, stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman.
Yeah.
The Business Trip by Super 8 Motels.
Somewhere between the last meeting and home, between four drive-thrus and the blob of ketchup on your favorite tie, between 60 dead bugs on your windshield, an empty window squirter, and a wiper blade gone awry. Somewhere between where you are and where you're going, there's a Super 8. See you along the way.
Call 1-800-800-8000 or visit super8.com. All Super 8 motels are individually owned and operated.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really?
Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Frustrating, and you tell me over and over
to fight a war on terror? Or is the third George to be president of the United States making the same mistake as did Britain's King George III? By the way, if you'd like to drop into our chat room, let me just stick my head in there. Hello, everybody. Yeah, the chat room's there and alive and lots of interesting stuff going on. Go to liberaltalkradio.com or tomhartman.com and follow the links to the radio show. And there's a little button there on the left-hand side that says chat room. And drop in there, and that takes you to the Tradeform and CompuServe. Click the chat button, and boom, you are in. There is no fee if you're not already an AOL or CompuServe member. You will have to sign up, but it's not going to put you on a spam list, and it's not going to take any money from you or anything. It's just a way of keeping track of who's there, when they come back, and that kind of thing. So, you know, it's like housekeeping stuff. So just to let you know about it. Is George Bush making the same mistake is George III here in the United States? We had George Washington, George Bush Sr., and George Bush Jr. Now, is our third George making the same mistake that the third George in Great Britain made in 1773? When he tried to put down, when he responded to the Boston Tea Party with the Boston Port Act and then the Boston Massacre, and then on it went from there. Is he making the same mistake? Is this, how do you deal with what George Bush is calling terrorism? Let's just listen to the final part of this quote from him.
And for America, there will be no going back to the era before September the 11th, 2001, to false comfort in a dangerous world.
Keep in mind the whole definition of terrorism. A terrorist is someone who keeps civilians in terror. That's the job of a terrorist, is to provide terror to civilians. And I'm not suggesting that George Bush is a terrorist, but I think that when he says things like this, he is playing right into their hands. He is just absolutely playing right into their hands. We shall not return to an era when we had...
to false comfort in a dangerous world.
Yeah, so it's just... This is not good. This is very much not good. So, the first issue, how do you deal with this? We've got a bunch of people who attack the World Trade Center. Boom. They knock the thing down. They, you know, it's a terrorist act, and they're going, hey, look at us. Look at what we did. How do you deal with it? How should the United States respond? I wrote a piece about this for Common Dreams some time back. Again, if you click on the Common Dreams link off any part of my website, it'll take you to a list of the columns that I've written. And it's about the never-ending war on terror. And my point was, and actually this is a point that was being made at the United Nations back right after 9/11. This is a point that diplomats all over the world were making, and a lot of people in the diplomatic circles were very confused when George Bush went off in the direction he went. The point is that these guys who attacked us are not a foreign nation. They are criminals. They are horrible, low-life scum criminals, and they need to be tracked down by police apparatus with the cooperation of governments all over the world. Now, people say on the right, but those governments aren't cooperating in Afghanistan and Iraq. Yeah, so we have to do something about that. And what should we do? Let's talk about that right after the break. But there is a solution to this. There is an appropriate way to deal with this, and hopefully the next president will figure it out. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Thank you.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton. Following months of contract talks, union employees of the phone giant Verizon will have a chance to vote on a tentative new contract. Two unions representing nearly 80,000 Verizon workers reached the five-year deal late Thursday.
Given the hard positions that the parties had staked out at the beginning of the talks, we think we gained all our major objectives in this contract.
Jim Spillane is director of the Journal and Media Department at the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. He says the tentative contract will maintain solid health coverage for workers and will protect their job security.
And that was something that we just saw as a real bedrock issue in this. We just felt we could not give in on that. And we feel very good that we were able to keep that language and keep those protections in place.
On the downside, the union failed to secure an agreement that would have made it easier to organize workers in Verizon's wireless division. If approved, the contract would also freeze wages in its first year.
The Bush administration calls it an improving jobs picture, but the August decline in the national unemployment rate from 6.2 to 6.1% does not bring good news. A net 93,000 jobs were lost during the month, and the losses were not confined just to one area. 28,000 professional and business service jobs disappeared, and the ice-cold tech sector dropped another 16,000.
A federal employees union loses its latest bid to win collective bargaining rights for the nation's baggage screeners. In January, Transportation Security Administration Chief James Loy stripped the screeners of their full union rights, and on Friday, a federal district court judge dismissed a lawsuit brought by the American Federation of Government Employees challenging that decision. The case now heads back to the Federal Labor Relations Authority, which has already ruled once against the union.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Stephen Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Stephen at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to IEAmericaRadio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Talk radio for the rest of us. Is this any way to fight a war on terror, or is the third George to be president of the United States making the same mistake as did Britain's King George III? One of the few members of the United States Senate who's not a multimillionaire, perhaps the only one. I frankly don't have a list of all of them, but I know that it's extremely rare for a senator not to be extraordinarily wealthy. One of the few who's not a multimillionaire is Jim Jeffords, the former Republican senator from Vermont, and frankly the last Republican that I voted for. And I he showed when he left the Republican Party and became an independent that. I think my vote was vindicated. And a couple of days ago, Jim Jeffords had this to say about Bush and the war and all this stuff. Let me just share this with you.
I am pleased to see calls for congressional investigators
to determine whether the president manipulated intelligence information to build support for the war. Why the hurry to invade the country and use military force in such an unprecedented manner? Where was the imminent threat to the United States? And where are the weapons of mass destruction?
Amen. And you'll notice that they weren't mentioned last night. This, in my opinion, what we have here is a situation where, number one, we're responding to terror wrong, and number two, our going into Iraq had nothing to do with it. And to have any kind of a rational discussion with anybody, and we talk about helping you win the water cooler wars, and I got an email here from Todd, doesn't say where he is, saying, you know, what are your thoughts on this? Occasionally I get these right-wingers who want to talk to me about this, and they cite the examples of Somalia and Beirut and say, you know, we didn't respond, and it just emboldened them. And I think, yeah, that was a problem. That was a mistake. We really should have mobilized a worldwide police action against the people who attacked us in Beirut. And at the same time, we should have been intelligently, thoughtfully, carefully trying to figure out what is motivating these people. See, the mistake, the fundamental mistake, And I know, you know, Newt will hear me say this and go, ah, it's that liberal talk about you got to consider other human beings. Yeah. The fundamental mistake that George Bush is making is thinking that these people are behaving the way they do because they are evil. It's the same mistake that King George of England made when he suggested that the rabble-rousers and revolutionists in the United States were doing so because they lacked moral character. If you go back and you read Osama bin Laden's original demands to the United States before 9/11, he demanded that we pull out of Saudi Arabia. This all goes back to the first Gulf War. During the first Gulf War, we stationed troops in Saudi Arabia, and it really infuriated a lot of the Saudis who consider Saudi Arabia to be sacred land. This is the land of the Prophet. This is the country that holds Mecca and Medina, the holiest cities of Islam. This is sacred ground to them. And we had on that sacred ground women who were not covered from head to toe, men who were drinking alcohol and watching porno movies in their apartments and reading Playboy magazine. And it flipped them out. Now, we should have even dug a little bit deeper. And actually, some were in the State Department, and there were people in the intelligence services warning about these things, saying, this is coming. This is coming. In fact, there were a lot of them saying this is coming, and here's why. The Saudi government, the Saudi royal family, having no true legitimate rightful claim to the power that they hold, other than the fact that they had cut the deal with the British 50 years ago, and they took all the money, and they built the police force and the army. In order to hold power, basically cut a deal with the extreme right-wing mullahs, it's a faction of Islam called Wahhabism, the Wahhabis. And they started building schools all over Saudi Arabia for these Wahhabist clerics to preach, and the core of their theology is that anybody who is not Arab and Muslim and particularly Saudi is genetically inferior and is doomed to go to hell. This is religious fundamentalism, pure and simple. It's the same kind of religious fundamentalism you find in the white supremacy movement in the United States, where you've got these guys running around saying that, you know, only white people are God's chosen people, and that, you know, the that the white people actually in America are really the descendants of the Jews, and the people who claim to be Jews aren't, and anybody of any color isn't, you know, quack, 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 quack. And it is a form of mental illness. And it is a highly contagious form of mental illness, and where it breeds, just like mosquito larvae breed in standing water and bacteria breed in wounds, this stuff breeds in poverty and in oppression. Isn't it interesting that as the countries of Europe, of Western Europe, and all over the world, but I mean we all know about it because it's most obvious, because Europe has been in our face so much, you know, with Come Visit France ads on TV for the last 30 years, that as the countries of Western Europe became more prosperous, as the United States became more prosperous, the religious fundamentalism, particularly the toxic, racist, xenophobic types of religious fundamentalism, diminished. Same thing happened in North America in the 1600s. You had the Puritans who came over here from England, quote, to escape religious persecution, end quote. And what did they do? They started religiously persecuting as soon as they got here. So William Penn sets up Pennsylvania as like a religion-free zone. You should read Ben Franklin's biography. There's two of them out now, two really good biographies of him. Excellent. They talk about this era. And as New York and Pennsylvania, which were not religiously right-wing, became more prosperous, religion just transformed. I mean, the major religion of those days were the Unitarians and the deists like Jefferson, Washington, and Franklin. And similarly, up in Massachusetts, John Adams, in his letters to Thomas Jefferson, it's fascinating how he talks about how as it became wealthier, the religious fanaticism died down. It just didn't have anything to grab hold of. And now we're seeing in the United States as the middle class is being wiped out, as the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer and the middle class is becoming the poor, you're seeing a resurgence of religious fanaticism, particularly the toxic form. The our way is better than your way, and therefore we get to kick your butt form. And this is what had taken over in large part Saudi Arabia. This produced Osama bin Laden. And then bin Laden says, hey, you're in our country with your troops and they're drinking alcohol and your women are uncovered and you're not censoring the things that people can read. And you gotta do something about that. You gotta leave. And we didn't leave, and so he whacked us several times. 9/11 just being the most recent. So my suggestion is twofold. One, we need to figure out what caused this and address it. Yes, there is a root cause to terrorism. We're pursuing the same path right now that Ariel Sharon is in Israel, and I'm telling you, it doesn't work and it won't work. You can't beat people into submission when they are experiencing poverty, privation, and they're living on the edge of survival. You cannot do it. They will fight back, particularly in this day of media where they can look at their television and say, whoa, look at that. That's how the rest of the world lives? But even before that, I mean, consider the history of Ireland. It was the 12th century, the 1300s, when England first started messing around in Irish affairs. It was the 16th century when the colonization started increasing and there were a bunch of rebellions against the English in the northern parts of Ireland. In the 17th century, you saw the plantation of Ulster. Tyrone, Derry, Armagh, Cavan, Permagh, they were settled by people from England and Scotland. And the Irish didn't like it. Battles started. They started fighting back in 1690. King William of Orange took on the Catholic King James's Catholic army, the Battle of Boyne. And then you can jump all the way up to 1916. I mean, it's the Easter Uprising. A post office in the center of Dublin was seized by a bunch of Irish rebels. The British soldiers come in. They take 15 of these guys out and shoot them. Execute them. 1916. 1922 and 21, long and bitter guerrilla campaign against the British Army. This eventually led to the separation of Northern Ireland. But the battles continued. It just kept on going. The Catholic minority now in Northern Ireland is feeling oppressed. 1968, the Civil Rights Movement. 1969, in August, the beginning, the provisional IRA shows up. 1971, internment without trial is introduced. The Patriot Act was applied to Ireland by the British in 1971. And what did that do? December 15th of that year, 15 people are killed in an attack in a Belfast pub. A month later, January of 92, Bloody Sunday, 13 Catholic protesters are shot by troops. January of 74, Unionists plant terror bombs, killing 30 people. October, November of 74, 26 people are killed in bombs. 79, August 1979, Lord Mountbatten, is the uncle of the Prince of Wales, King Charles's uncle, killed by an IRA bomb. 1981, Bobby Sands dies in prison after a hunger strike. All kinds of violence erupts all across Ireland. 1985, finally, the Anglo-Irish Agreement. But it wasn't enough. It didn't grant autonomy, and it didn't acknowledge the rights of the Irish, at least in their mind. It wasn't until December of 1995 when Bill Clinton went over and shook hands with Gerry Adams of the IRA that the British seriously. Now, this is a bit of an oversimplification. There was a good solid 5-year period in there of negotiations and working things out. That was kind of the high watermark of it, let's say. But the British said, okay, these people have legitimate rights, legitimate grievances, let's work this stuff out. Because since the 12th century, we have been standing on their necks, and the harder we whip them, the more they bomb us. And the result of that, of course, in 1999, the British government formally transferred governing power to the Northern Ireland Parliament. In 2000, Sinn Féin promises that the IRA will put down their weapons. 2001, David Trimble resigns. Maybe it's going to work, maybe it's not, but it's certainly moving in the right direction. There was a Nobel Peace Prize or two in there. The bottom line is we have to understand what's going on. There is terrorism coming to the United States, and it's coming to the United States as a result of our foreign policy of projecting power and supporting right-wing dictators, primarily in the Middle East, because we want to protect our oil supplies, number one. It's that simple. And if you want those people who in their minds are fighting to have their own kind of culture and society, and every time you put gas in your Hummer, some of that money goes to Saudi Arabia to pay for those Wahhabist schools that are teaching these people that this is how it should be. Right? So number one, we need to decouple ourselves from dependence on oil in the Middle East and stop propping up these dictatorships. And number two, we need to deal with those who would attack us as if they were criminals, not as if they are noble armies. When you declare war on somebody, you give them more credibility. We must respond to these to criminal acts as criminal acts, and that doesn't require us to eliminate our civil rights. It doesn't require a perpetual state of war. It doesn't require that the president grab more and more power from Congress and from the courts in order to fight a war like World War II, because it's not a war like World War II. There's not a nation out there that is fighting against us. There's a bunch of people scattered in probably 30 or 40 countries that can be tracked down. The Greeks did it with the November 17 group. The Germans did it with the Red Army. It was the Red Army, Red Brigades. The British are doing it and have done it with the IRA. This is not rocket science. The Peruvians did it with the Shining Path. Is this any way to fight a war on terror, or is the third George to be president of the United States making the same mistake as did Britain's King George III? I believe we are traveling down the same very dangerous road. Now, why? Why would we be traveling down this road? Well, there's the obvious, it gets more power for the party in power. The president gets more power at time of war, as James Madison pointed out. And Madison said this is a terrible danger, the power that comes with war. But I would suggest that there is a second agenda here. It has to do with profits and the corporate dominance of the American political system. Get into that right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah?
I'm taking Nicorette like you said, but right now I really need a cigarette. And according to my schedule, I'm not supposed to take another piece for 2 hours. So what should I do? And don't tell me to tough it out because it's not going to be pretty.
Take an extra piece?
Good idea.
When a really tough craving hits, just take an extra piece of Nicorette. As soon as you bite down, it delivers the medicine you need. Nicorette helps you quit one craving at a time. Use as directed. Follow dosing schedule. Individual results may vary. Support program can improve success rate.
You know, you ought to check your credit report.
But I just don't have time.
I have to clean out the garage.
And take the kids to the doctor.
And balance my checkbook.
And take the dog to the vet.
And mow the lawn.
And do the grocery shopping. And call the bank.
Stop. If you haven't checked your credit report, there's a fast, easy solution. Log on to freecreditreport.com and we'll show you how to find out online what's in your credit report. And get 30 days of our credit check monitoring service free. So don't say,
I'm just too busy.
Log on to freecreditreport.com today.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen. What production meeting? The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys. Imagine if we really tried. Doug. Yeah.
If we don't care and it shows.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Show.
Who's on the newsmaker line? George W.?
I thought maybe you could ask me some of them questions.
Oh, okay. In the past, it appeared that Kucinich supported the global gag rule that you have enforced. What's your position on that?
Vice President Cheney assures me that the gag rule is very important in case I say something stupid.
Oh. What do you have in mind for the Middle East and the situation in the Korean Peninsula?
Gonna kill him.
You're gonna kill him, okay.
Gonna kill him.
Are you interested in an in-depth inquiry into the missing weapons and of mass destruction?
Weapons of mass production are there. We found two trailers. Now, my daddy has an Airstream, so I know about trailers.
Yeah.
And if they roll over on a little car or something, there's a lot of destruction there.
Yeah, I see. Okay,
if they flip over in those desert winds.
Yeah.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Got to go back. We've got to go back. Got to go back. Got to go back. For the healing.
Could it be that the Bush family is profiting from this war? Could there be hidden agendas within hidden agendas, and not just the Bush family, but this whole bunch of them? The Rumsfeld, the Cheneys, the whole bunch of them. And that they're so in bed with the Saudi family. Well, here yesterday, this was Tim Russert ambushed Colin Powell yesterday, and I am amazed that this did not get picked up. This should have, in my mind, this should have been the screaming headline on the morning news today. Mr. Russert says, and I quote, "The cover of Time magazine tomorrow headlined, 'The Saudis, whose side are they on in the war for terror?' And this release from Vanity Fair magazine, former White House counterterrorism czar Richard Clark tells Vanity Fair that the Bush administration decided to allow a group of Saudis to fly out of the U.S. just after September 11, at a time when access to U.S. airspace was still restricted and required special government approval. According to other sources, at least four flights with about 140 Saudis, roughly two dozen members of the bin Laden family, flew to Saudi Arabia that week without even being interviewed or interrogated by the FBI. Then Russert says, and Powell answers,
"Why was that allowed?"
"Well, I don't know that that's accurate. I don't know the details of what happened, but
he's scared.
My understanding is that there was no sneaking out of the country.
Right.
That the flights were well known, and it was
by
coordinated
whom?
Within the government. But I don't have the details about what the FBI's role in it might or might not have been."
He just, if Colin Powell had that deer in headlights look on his face to the extent that he gets it, he actually is, I think, a very reasonable or very competent, let's say, diplomat. He's somebody who's pretty unflappable. You don't get to be a general without being relatively unflappable. He three times there, he said, "I don't know, I don't know, I don't know." He starts out, "I'm not even sure it happened." And then he says, "Well, it must have been approved and everything." So, you know, what's going on? What is happening? We have now a former member of the British Parliament, Mr. Meacher, Michael Meacher, coming out and saying publicly that he thinks that this whole thing in Iraq is a scam. It's part of an American attempt to essentially take over the world. Is he paranoid? Is he nuts? Or is something really big going on here that's completely being missed? Stay tuned. We'll talk more about this right after the news. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Yes, I'm calling about
about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Indiana Governor Frank O'Bannon has been hospitalized today after apparently collapsing earlier at a conference in Chicago. Reporter Mike Scott has details.
Indiana Governor Frank O'Bannon is inside Chicago's Northwestern Memorial Hospital in critical condition after collapsing at the start of this morning's U.S. Midwest Japan Conference at the downtown Palmer House Hilton. Sources say he was rushed to Northwestern with labored breathing, but no other details on his condition are available. He was one of five Midwest governors in town to address the conference. Mike Scott, Chicago.
President Bush addressed the nation last night on the progress of the war in Iraq. In his address, Mr. Bush said he's going to need more money to get Iraq back on its feet. He also offered no new information about the continuing search for weapons of mass destruction there, which, of course, were the primary justification for the invasion. But National Security Advice told NBC's Today Show getting rid of Saddam Hussein is just as good as finding those weapons of mass destruction.
Saddam Hussein is no longer in power. And Saddam Hussein was the problem with weapons of mass destruction. And so the president was talking about moving forward. But let's be very clear. Removing Saddam Hussein removes the threat of weapons of mass destruction.
President Bush said he'll ask Congress soon for nearly $90 billion for the post-war rebuilding of Iraq and Afghanistan. He called Iraq the central front in the so-called war against terrorism and said the U.S. will do, quote, whatever is necessary to win. The man nominated to take over as Palestinian prime minister wants certain assurances before he agrees to take what will be a difficult job. Ahmed Khoury was nominated by Palestinian President Yasser Arafat. He's seen as a moderate among Palestinians and the next best chance to navigate the so-called roadmap for peace, but Khoury says he wants some guarantees of peacemaking efforts from the U.S. and Europe before he takes the job. Khoury says, quote, I want to see whether peace is possible or not. He was named by Arafat to replace Mahmoud Abbas, who quit over the weekend because Arafat refused to give him more control over Palestinian security forces.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
Thousands of Bermudans and tourists of the tropical getaway are having problems with power and getting food and water. That coming after Hurricane Fabian slammed the island over the weekend. Meanwhile, Tropical Depression Henri is finally moving away after flooding streets in Florida. Hurricane Isabel, though, still churning out in the Atlantic, packing sustained winds of 105 miles an hour. Meanwhile, firefighters in Oregon have their hands full with a wildfire that's burned over 90,000 acres. It's said to be 50% contained across more than 61,000 acres.
Where will you be the next time your allergy strikes? Inside? Outside? In your car? Now you can take non-drowsy allergy medicine right when you need it. Announcing Quick Dissolving Allivert. It starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue without water. Allivert is prescription-strength, non-drowsy, 24-hour relief. Even Claritin can't beat. New Quick Dissolving Allivert. Allergy medicine right when you need it? Wherever you are. Use as directed.
The head of the United Nations Nuclear Watchdog Agency wants some answers from Iran. Mohammed al-Baradei, who's in charge of the International Atomic Energy Agency, is pushing for complete transparency and cooperation from Tehran.
Specifically, I'm going to
strongly urge Iran to clarify all issues relevant to its enrichment program to make sure that all its enrichment activities has been declared and is under agency verification.
Enrichment's the process of purifying uranium to make it usable for nuclear fuel or weapons. The U.S. says Iran is working on building a nuclear bomb, which Iran denies. Iran has refused to sign the IAEA's so-called additional protocol, which would allow inspectors complete access with little notice. Meanwhile, the agency also wants to get inspectors back on the job in North Korea. Al-Baradei says any deal that would end the nuclear impasse between Washington and Pyongyang must include a return of inspectors. The agency's inspectors were thrown out of North Korea New Year's Eve. Pyongyang later withdrew from the Worldwide Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Lyka with today's Car Clinic Minute. On her way to Oz, Dorothy feared lions and tigers and bears. Oh, no! But they're child's play compared to critters who might homestead in your car. Oh, yes. When I come back, I'll name names. Want to know the secret to finding a shop that can keep your car running like new? Find the cleanest shop in town, where cleaning is top priority. Not talking about clean floors, but better shops have those, too. I mean shops that have the best training, equipment, and chemistry to clean every air, fuel, and fluid system in your vehicle. Keep it clean, and you don't have to keep replacing parts. Find your clean shop at bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. You think Noah had it rough managing all those beasts? At least he had an ark, but some of them might hole up in your car. According to Pennzoil survey of 16,000 auto technicians, culprits for some repairs were furry, feathery, or scaly, like chickens trapped in air filters, squirrel nests in the AC, snakes wrapped around brake rotors, and rats storing dog food in exhaust pipes. But wait, don't call the Pied Piper. Have your vehicle checked out regularly by a qualified technician. I'm Bobby Lycus. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the Democracy Zone. It's just absolutely remarkable. USA Today today published an article pointing out that the United States is spending now in military expenditures in Iraq and Afghanistan an amount equal to the amount of money that was spent during the Vietnam War. I remember what a disaster the Vietnam War was for our economy. I was part of an educational program that got terminated. I mean, all this money went into our schools in the 50s as a result of Sputnik going up and Eisenhower going, oh my God, we got to do something, and isn't it terrible, and all the just enormous resources went into education, research and development, lots of good things. The infrastructure of America was being built, and as the Vietnam War came along, one by one these things fell away. They fell away over and over, one after the other, until there was virtually nothing left. And here in today's USA Today, this is also the lead story, the headline on CommonDreams.org. In Vietnam, the last sustained war the nation fought, the United States spent $111 billion during the 8 years of the war from 1964 to 1972. Adjusted for inflation, that's more than $494 billion, an average of $61.8 billion per year or $5.15 billion per month. $61.8 billion a year is what Vietnam cost, and Bush is about to ask for $87 billion, even more. Right now, so far, we have spent $73,059,079,242 on the war. If you go to Tom Hartman, to liberaltalkradio.com or tomhartmanshow.com, there's a cost of the war in Iraq there. And if you click on that, there's a link that says for more information. Click on that link.
And it takes you to a page that breaks this out. For example, the amount that we have already spent on the war in Iraq, which Bush last night just proposed we double, more than double, the amount that we have already spent on the war in Iraq would have paid for 7,378,072 children to attend a full year of Head Start. The amount of money that we have already spent in Iraq, the $73 billion, would have provided 22 million children, would have provided full health care, no deductibles, covering everything, eyes, teeth, body, mind, everything. 22,368,259 children, excuse me, 260 children, 261 children, 262 children. The number is ticks up as we are speaking. The money that we are spending right now in Iraq, the amount of money that we have spent so far, would have hired additional teachers for an entire full school year. 994,000 and four additional school teachers for an entire year. We could have hired 990,000 teachers for what we have spent so far in Iraq. What we have spent already on Iraq would have bought additional four-year scholarships at public universities, full four-year scholarships at public universities for 1,323,658 children, young adults. Over 1.3 million of our children could have gotten full four-year scholarships just on what we have spent on Iraq so far, and George W. is proposing to double that last night. The $73 billion we have spent so far in Iraq is enough to convert 13 million cars to natural gas. 13,046,324. And what about public housing? We wouldn't need to have Jimmy Carter and Habitat for Humanity running around building houses with donations, because with the money that we have already spent on the war in Iraq, we could build 745,504 homes. We could have built, just in the last year, 745,504 homes and handed them over to people. Just said, here you go, it's free, it's yours. And people could have had the experience of home ownership, which I personally think is the big failing of the public housing projects and experiment, was that we didn't allow people to own their own homes. And the Habitat for Humanity experiment is demonstrating that. And think of all the jobs that would have created. If we took the money that we spent in Iraq and built 743,000 houses, think how many people would have jobs as carpenters. Think how many raw materials would be needed. $73 billion is a lot of money. Where is that money going? It's going to Halliburton. It's going to Bechtel. It's going to General Dynamics. It's going to the Carlyle Group. With that money, we could have installed pollution control devices on every single power plant in the United States of America and still had cash left over. We could have had enough to fully fund Medicare for two full years. We could have increased tenfold our commitment to the global AIDS epidemic. We've spent $20 billion so far in Afghanistan. And yet today, Afghani women are routinely kidnapped off the street, raped, and then honor killed. And they continue to have to wear the burqa. Schools for girls have been burned. They're bartered like cattle. And in Afghanistan, opium poppy production has now reached the highest point in the history of the world. Afghanistan is supposed to be our victory, remember. It is a very unfortunate situation. Is this any way to fight a war on terror? Is the third George to be president of the United States making the same mistake as did Britain's King George III? 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Ruth, you have been patiently waiting on the line. I apologize for going off on another rant there. I was going to bring you in right after the news, and I just went off into space. Ruth in Florida, welcome to the Tom Hartman program, and thanks so much.
I like your rants. They're fine.
Well, bless you. Thank you.
Hey, okay. I get so involved in listening to you that by the time I get on, I have to, like, shift gears back to why I originally called you.
Okay.
I know. During the break, the hard news break, they were playing the clip that Condoleezza Rice, that talk yesterday. Did you hear that? Were you listening to that?
Yeah.
Because she's talking to a wolf. You can tell me whatever you want. I won't question you, Blitzer.
Yes.
And
yes.
She's saying in there that weapons of mass destruction don't matter. They don't matter because we removed Saddam Hussein. And since he was the impetus behind the weapons of mass destruction, the weapons of mass destruction no longer matter to us any longer.
Yeah, they're retelling the story. They started doing this months ago.
Oh, they've retold it so many times. They retell that story more than I change my underwear, but that's a different thing.
There you go.
The reason I called you, the thing I want to say, and I'm hoping that there are some Democratic people that are involved with campaigns listening, because I hear you say the things that need to be said. You talk about the fact that Halliburton and Bechtel are the ones that are making the money out of this. You talk about the fact that this is profit-driven. But until we consistently get somebody out there saying this over and over and over again in the mass media, and it's going to have to be the people who are in office and who are running for office. And I consistently see these people in the mass media, and they play along with the Republican tune. They only address whatever the administration has put out at that time. They don't talk about the larger picture. They don't talk about the fact that out of all the money we've spent in Iraq, how much of that is directly going back into the pocket of Halliburton. Because it's not going to support our troops.
Right.
It is not going to provide
support
for our troops, because those were all privatized. That's all money that's going to tax havens offshore. I want the people who have access to the media to hammer this home every single day. Bush just signed another executive order in the last week that says that the Secretary of Treasury, under the advisement of the Secretary of State, can take any property in Iraq and make it U.S. property.
Oh, I talked about this last week. He appointed a czar of privatization and identified 147 companies in Iraq that were previously state-owned that should be privatized and auctioned off to American investors.
The really hysterical thing is that what he's proposing in Iraq is socialism, of course. It's not really privatization.
Yeah, on the ground, yeah.
Healthcare
for all, education for all.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they put that out there. If it's such a great idea for Iraq, you know. But the bottom line is,
I would like to know.
We know that the energy manipulation in California largely took $46 billion out and put it in the pockets of the energy companies. Those companies, in turn, donated millions of dollars to get Bush in office.
Yeah, and to support Daryl Issa.
And to support what?
Daryl Issa and the recall campaign. Yeah.
To do the recall campaign, which they started as soon as the election was over.
Yeah.
But my point is that they are consistently rigging this so that the money they take is consistently going back into their own pockets. And you talk about it all the time, and you provide documentation. And there's a wealth of documentation for anybody who's willing to do the research. What I'm saying is that I want the people who have access to the media to hammer this home every day, because we know that it has an effect. We know that when we talk about these issues, it has an effect on the public.
Yeah.
It's when we don't.
Ruth, let me just make a suggestion, if I may.
Okay, go ahead.
You keep saying you want the people who have access to the media to say this, and I would suggest that you are one of the people who has access to the media. Back in the time of the Revolutionary War, the people in the late 1870s, in 1770, 6 years before the Revolution, before the Declaration of Independence, the vast majority of Americans would have nothing to do with independence from Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Even Thomas Jefferson in 1772 wrote a document called The Rights of British Americans about our responsibilities as good citizens under the crown. In 1773, there was the Boston Tea Party, and that started the whole thing, and then the Boston Massacre, and boom, it all went downhill very rapidly. But the thing that really brought this about was twofold. There were these pamphleteers, people who were basically running off pamphlets in the middle of the night, sticking them up on people's houses. Well, today's pamphleteers are the Internet, and if you have an email account, you are one of the pamphleteers, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two were the committees of correspondence. These two institutions, pamphleteers and committees of correspondence, created the American Revolution. Committees of correspondence were groups of people who got together in little networks where they would work together, three or four of them, to write letters to the editor of the newspapers, because newspapers will always publish those, or even if they won't, at least the publishers read them. And I would suggest that you get on the CNN site and send emails to every single one of those programs, to the producers, saying, well, you have a conservative and a moderate on there. Where's the liberal? Let's hear the real news. And continue with that. I'll rant more about that. Ruth, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No, I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Boy, I remember the good old days.
Yeah, when was that?
2003, of course, when interest rates were at historic lows and we knew the economy was turning around. What an historic opportunity. We really jumped on it. How'd you do?
Well,
We needed to expand our manufacturing and warehousing, so we called General Steel Corporation and ordered buildings engineered for our area and to meet our needs. And with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, our buildings look great.
How will you look back at this historic opportunity? Small business owners know that now is the best time to build that new warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $50,000 or a 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need to expand your business, you need the General. If your church or school needs to build quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Sometimes political posturing reaches a level that makes me go from merely gritting my teeth to wanting to puke. That's precisely how I feel as I see the White House engaged in a vile, disgusting betrayal of America's military veterans. Yes, the very Bushites who constantly exhort you and me to support our troops, and who crassly pose George W. in front of the troops for his political gain, these duplicitous game players are going all out to kill legislation that would give a simple measure of fairness to some 700,000 disabled and desperate veterans. These are frontline career soldiers who were injured in World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and other wars. Yet under an old law, these aging veterans are having their retirement pay docked for every dollar they get in disability benefits. In short, they are forced to pay for their own disabilities, which they incurred in military service to their country. A large bipartisan majority in Congress supports a bill to fix this, providing full pension and disability for these deserving vets. Bush himself promised in the 2000 campaign to rectify the unfairness, and he pledged just before being sworn in that, quote, promises made to our veterans will be promises kept. He lied. The White House now promises to veto the bill. Pentagon Chief Donnie Rumsfeld even went to Congress in July to tell lawmakers personally that Bush would slap the vets with the veto, declaring that the bill's $5 billion a year cost would break the budget. The bitter unfairness and raw stupidity of that statement is breathtaking. Rumsfeld routinely throws hundreds of billions of dollars at fat cat Pentagon contractors to make overpriced and unneeded weaponry, but when it comes to real need and doing what's right, he suddenly turns into a penny pincher.
This is Jim Hightower saying, let's not just puke, let's support the vets. Call the White House comment line, 202-456-1111.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
You win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Ruth, just to wrap that up, the committee's a correspondence thing. Not, we need to do it in the way, you know, the old time way it was done was writing letters to the editor of the newspaper, and that is a very, very important thing to do. Most people don't realize it, but elected officials actually read the letters to the editor part of the newspaper every day. If they don't read them themselves, they have somebody in their staff who reads them. In fact, in many ways, and particularly for local elected officials, or it might not so much be the case, for example, with the United States senator who's got an entire state, but if you've got a state senator who has a district that has one newspaper in that district, I guarantee you they are reading the letters to the editor every day or at least several times a week. And the publishers will, you know, they try to be fair and balanced, as it were. And so they will publish things in the letters to the editor. And so, number one, get it into the newspapers. Say these things. Number two, every single one of these radio and television talk shows has some form of web access. On mine, you go to TomHartmanShow.com. Boom, there you are. My email address is on there. You can send me a note. We have a message board. You can post messages, which I encourage you to do instead of sending me emails, because then you know, discussions can come out of it and things like that. But all of these sites, the other day I was watching a show on CNN. I forget which program it was, and they had whoever it was had on a no, it wasn't CNN. It was the McNeil Lehrer Hour. And he had on a guy from the American Enterprise Institute and somebody from some centrist thing like, you know, Time Magazine. It was like the right and the center. And they were both essentially supporting Bush and all this stuff. And so I sent him an email. I went to the website, McNeil Lehrer Hour. It's right there on the PBS website. You can send him an email. I sent him an email saying, you know, this is, you know, a right winger and where's the left? Where is the Democratic side of this? And believe it or not, they listen to those things. So you have access to the media also. And, of course, if there are media that you like, if there's things like, you know, you read Common Dreams, send it along to your friends. Forward messages to people. Let people know about it. Tell them about it. Tell them about websites you found. Tell them about radio programs you find. I'm hearing from a lot of people who are listening to this program as a result of word of mouth. A lot of, you know, in those areas where it's on the radio. Certainly, I mean, when a radio station picks us up, and we're having radio stations every couple of weeks, we've got a new radio station picking us up somewhere in the United States, they generally don't run big banners and billboards saying, da-da-da, you know, the radical middle or Tom Hartman or liberal talk radio or any of that stuff. It's a word-of-mouth thing, so spread the word. Pass the word around. Tell people how you heard about it. And those are how it happens. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Tim, driving through Kansas, is on the line. Tim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I certainly can.
Okay. You were talking about the four plane loads of Saudis left right after 9/11. And why would they do this? Let's try this one on. There's a little investment house called the Carlyle Group. Big Daddy Bush, Prince Abdul, members of the Bin Laden family, they've all been investors in the Carlyle Group.
Oh, Big Daddy Bush is an employee of it as well.
That's right. He's an advisor. And guess who else was an advisor? Colin Powell. Yes. And John Majors. And
yeah,
I think this is one of the reasons why, what's his name, Tony Blair?
Yeah.
He wants to be invited in as an investor after he retires from prime minister.
Well, these guys on the right know that they get well paid.
Pardon?
I said, these guys on the right know that after they leave government office, they will be well compensated. Look what just happened with these guys from the EPA who pushed through this rule allowing these old power plants. Two of them got these huge jobs with industry. Tim, on this network, because we're on network radio, we've got these hard breaks. I can't push the break back. But if you want to hang on, I'll let you finish your comment right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Rapid growth in irrigation is putting a strain on some water resources. An advocate argues for incentives to help farmers conserve. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Since 1949, American agriculture has seen a 25-fold increase in the use of irrigation. Jim Kleinschmidt is with the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy in Minneapolis. He says irrigation and suburban sprawl constrain groundwater supplies even in the Great Lakes region.
This loss of farmland combined with increased irrigation and withdrawal pressure on groundwater is really starting to be a concern, and you're seeing it in places within the basin where there are already wells are dropping, the water tables are dropping, there's becoming shortages.
And calls for tighter regulation. Michigan, for example, is considering a law to give municipal water supplies priority over agriculture. The move follows recent incidents where wells ran dry during times of heavy irrigation. But Kleinschmidt says it's unfair to simply blame farmers for water shortages. He says farmland also helps recharge groundwater supplies. Rain falling on cropland percolates down, unlike rain falling on city streets or parking lots.
A lot of people are looking at agriculture merely as the largest user, and our response is it has more roles than that. But it's also, can we look at the system, instead of looking at it from a regulatory perspective, can we see what kind of mechanisms, be they incentives or what have you, could be put in place at maybe a lower cost, but certainly at a bigger benefit to the farming communities, which are already struggling.
Kleinschmidt says farmers would respond to incentives to help conserve water. That could mean a break in the cost of more efficient irrigation systems or support for growing crops that require less water. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklefush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune in to the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Picklefush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Whoa, the world's fastest bumper music. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE. It's Tom Hartman on the IE Radio, America Radio Network. I want to welcome KGOE, our listeners in Eureka, California, a new station that just started carrying our program this week. And very pleased to be on the air there in Eureka, California. And thank you to the fine folks at KGOE for picking up our show. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. We were talking with Tim, who was driving through Kansas there on the line. Tim, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Do you have a final point to make?
Yeah, I have one other question. I think people need to be aware of this, and they better start asking this. When King George first took office, he sent out a decree or an order to the FBI and the CIA stopping all investigations that included the Saudis, the Saudi royalty, and the bin Laden family other than Osama bin Laden. Now, when we ask the question, why weren't we prepared? Why didn't we know about these people that were trying to learn how to fly airplanes? Maybe we better ask ourselves, what impact did this type of edict have on the supervisors of the FBI?
Well, there are some, including Bob Graham, who imply that the 28 pages blacked out of the Senate Intelligence Committee hearings point back to that and to the fact that bin Laden's brother, one of bin Laden's many brothers, was the fellow who bought George Bush's Harkin Energy stock. Bush was on the Finance Committee on Harkin Energy, and he knew that the company was in the next few days going to report a loss, and he sold his stock for $800-some-odd million, and then, you know, 3 days later it tanked. I mean, this was a Martha Stewart inside trading kind of thing, the exact same thing that Martha Stewart's going to jail for in all probability, but she only made $40,000, George W. made $800,000, and it looks like the guy who bought it was bin Laden's brother. That's one. And then, of course, George Sr. works for the bin Laden family, or was at the time. They bailed out of Carlisle after 9/11 because it was becoming a PR problem. But, yeah, these issues, and this isn't conspiracy nut stuff, by the way. You'll find this stuff in the New York Times. I mean, this is... It's just that it really doesn't get much of a play. It doesn't... If you hear it from the evening news of... I have to put my glasses on to see what city this is. But bin Laden's family... the Edinburgh Evening News. This is Edinburgh, Scotland. The United States allowed members of Osama bin Laden's family... And by the way, I've been in Scotland... The last time I was in Scotland was just 8 months ago, and I've read the Edinburgh Evening News, a fine newspaper, and not a tabloid rag. The United States allowed members of Osama bin Laden's family to jet out of the U.S. in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, even as American airspace was closed. Former White House counterterrorism czar Richard Clark said the Bush administration sanctioned the repatriation of about 140 high-ranking Saudi Arabians, including relatives of the al-Qaeda chief. Quote, somebody brought to us for approval the decision to let an airplane filled with Saudis, including members of the bin Laden family, leave the country, end quote, he said. Mr. Clark said he checked with the FBI, who gave the go-ahead, so I said, fine, let it happen. So he's the guy who authorized it. And the plane is believed to have landed in 10 U.S. cities, picking up passengers, including Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., Boston, and Houston. At the time, access to U.S. airspace was restricted and required special government approval. Tom Kinton, director of aviation at Boston's Logan Airport, said, quote, we were in the midst of the worst terrorist act in history, and here they are seeing an evacuation of the bin Ladens, end quote. Prince Bandar bin Sultan, the Saudi ambassador to the United States, who is said to have organized the exodus, met President George Bush on September 13, 2001, 2 days after the terrorist attacks. The White House has declined to comment on the claims. But FBI spokesman John Ian Narell says, quote, I can say unequivocally that the FBI had no role in facilitating these flights. End quote. Remarkable stuff. Tim, thanks for the call, and thanks for your comments. And keep waking folks up. Keep spreading the good word. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. If you'd like to drop in, say hello, 1-800-825-5937. It's 23 minutes before the hour. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And Helen's on the line from Boston, Massachusetts. Helen, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, Tom.
Hey, Helen.
what I called about is, well, first I want to comment on the bin Laden family. It was absolutely no secret here in Boston. It was in the Globe and everything else right after the 9/11.
Right after 9/11.
Yeah.
And yet people were...
You know, bin Laden, there's good bin Ladens and bad ones. The good ones are going to Harvard and had to, you know, donated X amount of money and so on. And they were all going home.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just
before they were interrogated by the FBI.
Oh, yeah.
And then for 2 years, the Saudi government refused to allow the FBI into Saudi Arabia to interrogate them. It still hasn't been done.
Yeah, of course. Oh, well. what I called about is the Rolling Thunder tour.
Yeah, Jim Hightower's gig.
Yeah. I just discovered this last year, and I was too late to go to it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm seeing that it's coming up again in Manchester, New Hampshire. God, what day is this? We're the 8th, right?
Today is the 8th, yes.
Right. So it'll be a week from this Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
And
That's great. And it's actually happening all over the United States. Is there a website that you know of, Helen, where people can find more information about it?
Yeah. www.rollingthundertour.org.
Okay, great. Helen, thank you very much for calling and sharing that with www.rollingthundertour.org, and you know, we'll pass the word along. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Is this any way to fight a war on terror? Is it even a war on terror? Or is the third George to be president of the United States making the same mistake as did Britain's King George III? Let's keep in mind what James Madison said on April 20, 1795. He wrote, and I quote, "Of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded because it comprises and develops the germ of every other. War is the parent of armies. From these proceed debts and taxes, and armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few." But then he really gets into the meat of the matter. Madison says, "In war, too, the discretionary power of the executive branch of government is extended. Its influence, the president's influence in dealing out offices, honors, and emoluments is multiplied, and all the means of seducing the minds are added to those of subduing the force of the people. The same malignant aspect in republicanism may be traced in the inequality of fortunes and the opportunities of fraud that grow out of a state of war, and in the degeneracy of manners and morals engendered by both. No nation," James Madison wrote, "could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare." And yet last night George W. Bush told us, we are in, as he says he told us right after 9/11, in a continual war, war without end. Have you read George Orwell's 1984? It might be a good time to revisit it. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937 is our number. And Joe in Brookings, Oregon, I can't quite read that on the screen there. Joe, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What town are you in?
What's that?
What town are you in?
Yeah, Brookings, Oregon.
Brookings, okay, great.
Yeah, right next to the California border. And, yeah, your show just started being picked up on KGOE. In Eureka, California, about 100 miles south of here. So,
oh, great.
Oh, yeah. They had it off for the first hour, so I went ahead and called your guys' control room to tell them about it because today's the first day. But, yeah, you were talking about left-wingers or, you know, people at least left of center not getting to be on TV. I mean, you know, all you have to do is look at the guest list for these shows like O'Reilly Factor, Hannity and Combs, and the other networks. And the other shows, like Hannity and Combs, a lot of times what they'll do is put a guest on. If they do put a left-of-center guest on, they'll put someone on who's a total caricature and is a total ridiculous joke.
A schmuck.
What's that?
I said a schmuck.
Yeah, that's right. Like Sean Hannity, that little, you know, neo-fascist Rush Limbaugh wannabe twit. He, like, for instance, he'll always have this guy on from the new Black Panther Party, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, these guys aren't representative at all of what the old Black Panther Party was like, who really did some good things back then.
Well, and even there, he probably wouldn't get the most articulate of the new Black Panthers. It's what they understand there is that, number one, they're in the entertainment business, and so they want to get people who are entertaining, which means people who are outrageous. And number two, wrapped in the middle of that entertainment, they want to promote a particular political message. And they promote that particular political message very carefully and very thoughtfully by choosing who they're going to have on and also setting up the situation, you know, who's going to be opposite them. It's very rare that anybody on the left or even in the center ends up with ends up looking good or sounding coherent on the Hannity show. Pardon me for interrupting you, Joe.
No, that's okay. As far as that sort of thing goes, you know, it's just the way that even when you're not talking about the guests on TV, the way they cover the news in general. Of course, you remember that that little blackout they had on the East Coast a few weeks ago. The so-called the so-called guest for the left of center was Bill Richardson, Of course, they didn't. You know, they didn't even bother to ask. You know, like Ralph Nader, if he'd have anything to say about it. Earlier that week, why was Ralph Nader in the news? Because he got hit in the face with a pie. Yuck, yuck. I mean, that's the way these guys are. They're not very serious in the media. That's why they covered
it's over the it's over the top, Joe. I appreciate it. I agree with you, and I thanks for the call, by the way, and I appreciate your calling and spot on. And therefore, it's important that we communicate to the media and say, this is what I would like to hear. This is let's really have some balance. Let's really have some rational discussion out there. You're going to have right-wingers have left-wingers on. Let's take back America. The whole concept of democracy is that it survives best in an adversarial society, in a society not adversarial like people are picking on each other, but where you have diverse points of view. This is why we have the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States that absolutely guarantees freedom of the press. And the press will respond, believe it or not. I still have faith. I still have faith in this country. I still believe that America is a great nation and can become better. And I believe that we're gonna have to do it the same way that they did in American Revolution time, the women's suffrage movement, the abolition movement, the civil rights movement, and that is, you know, through committees of correspondence, through pamphleting, through spreading the word, through sharing it with other people, get out there and change people's minds by rational discourse, by presenting the facts, telling them what's going on, waking them up. So many people are just kind of in a fog, and it's not that they're dumb. It's that this neo-feudalism of this whole conservative mindset that the whole purpose of an economy is to suck money out of the middle class and you know you can put the words cheap labor in front of the word conservative and define their agenda in almost all situations. It's all about cheap labor. And the result of this is that people are working harder and harder and harder, faster and faster and faster, just to try and stand still. And they don't have time to carefully read the media. They don't have time to carefully, you know, sit down with Common Dreams every day and read it. I have a piece on Common Dreams. I think it's still up on the homepage today. It went up last Thursday. Anyway, just as an FYI, commondreams.org is a great news site. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Pablo in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Pablo, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Pablo.
Yeah, I just had a brief thing. You know, as far as the story about the bin Laden family being flown out within a few days of 9/11, whatever it was. And also the Karl Rove outing of Ambassador Wilson's wife, the CIA agent.
Right.
A good way to help get those stories to the people who can get publicity for them, such as the Democratic presidential candidates, is a lot of these candidates have weblogs where you can leave comments and, you know, chat rooms. And just to, you know, talk about that, leave the links for the information. And people from the campaigns do read those. And
yeah.
I think that's a good way to, you know, get it sort of out there, because if one of these candidates can, those will be listened to more likely than, you know, me or you, unfortunately.
Well, and that's a very powerful thing that we can't ignore, Pablo, is that the candidates actually do listen to the people in more often than not. It seems to be, at least on the Democratic side, certainly on the Republican side, it seems to be more they're so beholden to their big corporate paymasters that they just really have no choice, which you find some of these Republicans just kind of squirming about. But there are a few, you know, Voinovich and Snow, for example, who are still holding principal stands in the face of power from their party. But the bottom line is that if you contact your elected officials, you know, that's the thing I missed when I was talking to Ruth a little earlier. If you contact your elected officials, they will respond. And if they hear from enough of us saying, hey, you know, we really think that you should be doing A or B, or we really are opposed to or in favor of C or D, then there will be change. There will be a response. Pablo, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Billy's in Santa Cruz. He's called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. And Billy, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Hey, Billy.
You just told everybody to send mail to their office holder. And what you forgot to say was to include cash, because if you don't buy them, they don't care.
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with sending a letter to your elected officials with $5 in it, with a check for $5.
Literally. Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
You know, Tom,
and even $5, suddenly you're on the donor list, and they pay attention to you.
Exactly. You got it. Look, the fact is that, you know, I was talking to someone about a Chinese girl from China who's presently was just living in Canada, coming down here to work at a local company. And she came in before she was ready, before her visa was ready. And we were trying to explain to her that you can't, like, unlike in China or in most places in the world, you do not bribe the low officials. You bribe the, you know, the high officials. You can bribe a president. You can bribe a congressman in America. Who you can't bribe is the typical custom agent.
Right.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is. And yeah. and it's very unfortunate. And it traces back to a Supreme Court decision in 1987, the Boston versus Bilotti case, where the Supreme Court, looking at the 1886 Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad from your...
My area.
It's not your county. It's the next one up, isn't it?
Yep, yep.
Where Judge Stephen Field kicked this up to the Supreme Court in 1885. And in 1886, the court, it is said, the myth is, the court ruled that corporations are persons and have access to the Bill of Rights. Turns out that it's a lie, that John Chandler Bancroft Davis wrote it in the headnote to the case, but the justices didn't actually say that. But we've based 100 years of law on it in the United States, and it's just the situation has become ridiculous in the extreme, to quote Thomas Jefferson.
Tom, you're so smart, but you know what? Let's talk about the media for a second.
And okay, we've got about 15 seconds here, Billy.
That you're smart, and the media's not interested in your smart. What the media's interested in is... in the word you used disparagingly, and that is outrageous. If the left isn't willing to be outrageous on our side, we won't get on the air because the media isn't doing the job it's supposed to do anymore.
We are on the air, Billy, right now. You and I are both on the air, and we are being smart and outrageous, and we're going to continue. Billy, thanks for the call. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Hi, I'm Hunter Ellis, and I want to tell you about my new series, Tactical to Practical.
Tactical to what?
To practical.
Shows have to rhyme now?
No. It's a show about how military technology goes civilian.
Some ex-Navy dolphins cleaned my pool once.
Really?
Yes, only 5 fish a day. Everything was going swimmingly until a Navy SEAL showed up.
Watch Tactical to Practical this Tuesday night at 9, 8 Central, only on the History Channel. And don't worry, Gilbert's not in it.
What?
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows when you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk.
not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Show.
Gizmo's back on the line in Tucson, Arizona.
First off, I'd like to tell you I'm on Sirius Radio 145 Left and say hi to my other trucker buddies out there that listen to you, Kodiak and James. And
great.
I pulled this 18-wheel car over to the side of the road to speak with you. I've read a couple articles that suggested that Bush Sr., had he gotten a second term, would have followed pretty much the same lines to go to war with Iraq. I'm wondering if there wasn't some kind of conspiracy all the way back to the 2000 election to get Jr. in so he could go ahead and fulfill the plans designed for their father in his second term. I enjoy your program. You're very informative, and I've learned a lot from listening to you, and I appreciate your program, Tom, so keep it up.
Well, thank you, Gizmo. That's very kind of you, and thanks for pulling that 18-wheeler off to the side. I didn't realize you were driving a truck. That's remarkable.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
On the IE America Radio Network. According to the Associated Press, an article in the paper from, I think it was Saturday's newspaper, America's infrastructure is coming apart at the seams, according to an analysis released Thursday by several engineers who warned about congested roads, crumbling bridges and schools, and outdated drinking water systems. 12 key categories of infrastructure showed little or no improvement, and in many cases worsened, in the past 2 years. The nation is, quote, failing to even maintain the substandard conditions we currently have for roads and bridges. The report said 75% of the nation's school buildings are inadequate. And Representative John Duncan, Republican of Tennessee, said the needs are immediate. He said, and I quote, I would say that if we can spend $1 billion a week in Iraq, that we should be doing the same kinds of things for the people in this country. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, my friends. It's going to be very, very interesting to see. They really thought they had this all figured out. You go back and you look. This is the piece that I wrote on commondreams.org, which should be down toward the bottom of the homepage. And if you don't see it, you just go to tomhartman.com and click on the link to my articles on democracy. It's right at the top. And it has a link in it to documents that came out from a lawsuit by the guy that brought down Larry Klayman, the guy who brought down Bill Clinton, or tried to, with Monica. He initiated the original Paula Jones lawsuit. Judicial Watch. Judicialwatch.org is their website. And he sued Dick Cheney, saying, I want to know who was in that meeting when you determined, when you created the National Energy Policy of the United States. Who was in that meeting and what did you talk about? And he's now gotten a couple of documents. And I'm just astounded this isn't on the front page of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. Well, I know why it's not on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, but why not on the New York Times? The documents show that in April, May, June, before 9/11, Dick Cheney and Halliburton and Enron and the other big oil companies sat in the White House and divided up Iraq. They had the names of all the oil fields, over 100 different oil fields. They had the names of the oil fields. They had the names of the unexplored areas. And they had a list of corporations that were potential customers along with their nationality. And the document you can find right there online at JudicialWatch.org's website. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news. You're in the Democracy Zone. Stay tuned.
Square. It's coming from the fields that just ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens, night and day.
been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Tom Roberts. Britain will immediately send another 1,200 troops to help stabilize Iraq, with plans to send an additional 1,000 in the coming weeks. British Forces spokesman in Basra, Hishim Halawi, says over the weekend, 120 soldiers were flown to British-controlled southern Iraq.
They arrived in Basra to assist in our operations here. They're purely a reserve of 120 soldiers that have arrived here, and they're going to be carrying out duties where required to assist us in our operations, in our security operations here in Basra.
London will also deploy reinforcements to work on Iraq's battered infrastructure. The U.S. will do and spend what is necessary to achieve peace in Iraq. That's what President Bush had to say last night about the war on Iraq during his address. He urged other nations to send more troops to Iraq to secure the peace, and he said he'd push Congress for $87 billion for the effort in Iraq and Afghanistan. The head of the U.N.'s nuclear watchdog group wants answers from Iran. Mohammed El-Baradei, who's in charge of the International Atomic Energy Agency, is urging the country to answer all remaining questions about its uranium enrichment program. El-Baradei demanded transparency and total cooperation from Iran.
Specifically, I'm going to strongly urge Iran to clarify all issues relevant to its enrichment program, to make sure that all its enrichment activities has been declared and is under agency verification.
The U.S. says Iran is working to produce a nuclear bomb, which Iran denies. Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat's choice for his new prime minister wants guarantees from the U.S. and EU before accepting the post. Ahmed Korey says he wants to see the position of all parties involved and what they expect of Palestinians. Indiana Governor Frank O'Bannon remains in critical condition at a Chicago hospital. Mike Scott reports.
O'Bannon was taken to Northwestern Memorial Hospital in critical condition this morning, shortly before his scheduled appearance at a Japanese-American economic summit at the Palmer House Hilton Hotel downtown. Sources close to the situation are saying O'Bannon was discovered collapsed in his room by Indiana State troopers assigned to his detail. Mike Scott, Chicago.
More in a moment.
They left their farms and factories, their offices and classrooms. 16 million Americans in uniform. 400,000 gave their lives for freedom. For the first time, young women eagerly entered the workforce to supply the arsenal the world depended on for victory. But this was no faceless mass that went to war. They were my relatives and yours, our fathers and mothers, our grandparents and next-door neighbors. They were our family's heroes. And yet, unbelievably, there's no national monument anywhere to honor the amazing generation that won World War II. I'm Tom Hanks. Please help build the National World War II Memorial on the Mall in Washington, D.C. Call 1-800-639-4WW2. That's 1-800-639-4992. It's time to say thank you.
A public service message from the American Battle Monuments Commission, the Ad Council, and this station.
Voting in the California gubernatorial recall election starts today. No one can go to the polls yet, but today is the first day absentee ballots will be accepted. During a campaign stop over the weekend, California Governor Gray Davis commented on the accent of Austrian-born Republican candidate Arnold Schwarzenegger. He said someone who can't pronounce California shouldn't run the state. The attorney of a Kennedy cousin convicted of murder says she'll try to get a new trial for her client. Michael Skakel is serving 20 years to life for the beating death of a 15-year-old neighbor in 1975. More after this.
All right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Powell, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer has got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit Geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
The producers of American Idol reportedly are clamping down on what songs can be performed during auditions. People.com says the contestants have been banned from performing songs by Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey, R. Kelly, and others. Fox hasn't explained why the songs aren't allowed, but there is speculation the rights to the songs are difficult to obtain. Others believe the songs have simply been performed too many times. A Norman, Oklahoma police officer was surprised to find a man delivering newspapers in the nude, Lieutenant Tom Easley.
The officer happened to stop him for an equipment violation. Walked up on the car and said, "Oh, Lordy, look out."
Officer Easley says the man picked an unusual part of town for the special delivery.
He was directly north of the police department, about two or three blocks.
When the officer pushed for the full naked truth, the delivery contractor for the Daily Oklahoman admitted to taking papers up to customers' doors while naked as well. The man was ticketed and will have to pay a small fine. I'm Tom Roberts, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Ask Shirley MacLaine, and she may tell you she was Marie Antoinette or even Zeus in another life. Believe that or not, I'll tell you about some real automotive reincarnations when I come back. Want to know the secret to finding a shop that can keep your car running like new? Find the cleanest shop in town, where cleaning is top priority. Not talking about clean floors, but better shops have those too. I mean shops that have the best training, equipment, and chemistry to clean every air, fuel, and fluid system in your vehicle. Keep it clean, and you don't have to keep replacing parts. Find your clean shop at bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. You won't need a seance to see where your old car might have gone. Just drive to your new car dealer, because 12 million vehicles were recycled last year. Thanks to open loop recycling, any scrap of steel liquefied in the process melting furnace can be reformed into any shape. That means fenders of old Crown Vicks or Caprices might reincarnate as hoods of brand new Mercedes. And like the mythological Phoenix, steel conquers its trial by fire and is actually strengthened in the recycling process. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's been written about in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and Pravda. He spent time with the Pope and the Dalai Lama. And now you can talk with Tom Hartman simply by calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom Hartman.
This is life and death, says Jim Jeffords, the senator from Vermont, the United States senator from Vermont. According to the American Lung Association, he says, the Harvard School of Public Health and others, this rule being this administrative policy that this administration slipped through before their new head of the EPA had to be installed so that he wouldn't have to take responsibility for it, that allows tens of thousands of old power plants and factories to increase the level of pollution that they're producing. Jeffers says this rule will mean at least 20,000 additional premature deaths each year. Now think how many people died in 9/11. 20,000 additional premature deaths each year, at least 400,000 additional asthma attacks each year, and at least 12,000 additional cases of chronic bronchitis each year. This, Jeffords says, is a disaster. In fact, he continues,
well, President Bush hasn't just overreached. He has set a new standard for extreme partisan politics that on many occasions has been supported by the Republican-controlled Congress. In place of thoughtful policy, we now have superficial and cynical sound bites. Instead of confronting pressing national problems, our president lands airplanes while Rome burns.
While Rome burns. He lands airplane. He didn't actually land the airplane. He was a passenger on that airplane. There was a real pilot flying it. Bush had never been certified to fly that kind of aircraft, and as we all know now, was even AWOL from the National Guard. Something that has always confused me. I remember back in the 60s, people I knew who were trying to get into the National Guard because the National Guard was only for domestic defense, and that meant that you would never go to Vietnam if you got in the National Guard. Of course, that's what George W. did, and you know, got his daddy to push him to the head of the line to get in there. I'm wondering when we started sending the National Guard overseas. I frankly don't know. And if anybody knows, you go to TomHartmanShow.com and you can see the message board. And you go to our message board, and there's probably 20,000 messages in there. Some of them have to do with a couple of different books that I've written about the environment or about education, about psychology. But there's one section called the radio show, and you post a message in there. I would love to know what you think about that. But back to this 9/11 thing, I just want to wrap this up. This is the week of 9/11. This is the week in, you know, in fact, we're going to have a special show on Thursday that has to do with 9/11. And I, because this is the week, I think it's important that we pay a little closer attention than normal to this. The Information Clearinghouse, informationclearinghouse.info, on the web, has a September 11th in the Bush administration article by Dr. Walter E. Davis. And it's a great compilation of 25, as I recall, 25 specific issues, shall we say, relating to 9/11. And they suggest 9/11 serves as a pretext for a never-ending war against the world, including preemptive strikes against defenseless but resource-rich countries, and as a pretext for draconian measures of repression at home. And every day, I want to just share with you one or two of these items. For a while there, we were doing Bush lies every day. We had this list from one of the congressmen who was on the House Appropriations Committee, has published it on the Internet. And it's called Caught on Video, and it was all of Bush's different lies that he's told. And we're not talking small things. These were big things. Standing, you know, going to a factory and talking about how he was all in favor of whatever was going on there, and then cutting that program. I shouldn't try to do these things from memory. Anyhow, it was fun. We did that for a few weeks. I want to do these 9/11 ones for a while. Here's one to drop into the hopper from informationclearinghouse.info. The entire United States intelligence community knew of the 9/11 attacks beforehand, including the fact that commercial jets were to be used as bombs. They also knew the approximate dates and possible targets, but were called off their investigations. This, by the way, is backed up by the recent Senate report. 7 to 8 weeks prior to 9/11, all internal U.S. security agencies were warned of the impending al-Qaeda attacks. The Federal Aviation Administration was warned of the attack, but did nothing to beef up security. At least 2 weeks prior to 9/11, the FBI agents again confirmed that an attack on Lower Manhattan was imminent. However, the FBI agents were commanded to cut short their investigations into the attack and those involved. Agents were threatened with prosecution under the National Security Act if they publicized information pertaining to their investigations. Some field agents predicted almost precisely what happened on 9/11. CBS revealed that President Bush had been warned in an intelligence briefing on August 6th, almost exactly 1 month before 9/11, that bin Laden was planning to hijack commercial airplanes for a domestic attack on the U.S. So that's our 9/11 alert for the day. I don't know if you saw this guy on C-SPAN over the weekend. Some guy's got this new book out about how 9/11 was Bill Clinton's fault. It's like these guys... It's everything has to be Bill Clinton's fault. If anything happens, they've got to pull Bill Clinton out of. They don't have anybody else to beat up, I guess. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. 1-800-825-5937. We're going to get into this. If 9/11 was a crime, do the criminals include the Bushes and the Saudis? But Jim, driving through Mississippi, is on the line. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
I was listening to that guy this weekend on C-SPAN, and he said that Clinton, you know, knew all about bin Laden and did nothing about it. Well, you know, George Bush knew about him too, and he didn't do anything about it either.
Not only that, what he completely ignored, and very convenient. I mean, obviously the book is just a partisan rag. It's not any attempt at scholarship. What he conveniently ignored was that on the record, when the handoff was made between the Clinton security, National Security Agency, and the Bush National Security folks, Condoleezza Rice and whatnot, they were told explicitly, and this is in Sidney Blumenthal's book, I believe, that the number one priority of the Clinton administration at that moment was to find bin Laden and prevent him from attacking the United States because they could see it coming. And Bush said, Saudis, bin Ladens, wait a minute, that's my daddy's business partner, just back off and put everything on hold. That somehow didn't get mentioned.
Well, you know,
Jim, it sounds like you got an airplane going over your head there.
Well, I'm driving through Mississippi here. I'm in a truck, and it's hard to talk on this thing sometimes. But, you know, since this war started, I've become more and more of the belief that it's less and less about oil and more about corporate contracts. And, you know, I really think that, Tom, I'd love for you to do a large segment on the Carlyle Group. I believe that there's something going on here. Something doesn't pass the smell test. And, Frank Carlucci, I read over the weekend, is now the owner or a CEO of a voting machine company. And I didn't know if you knew about that. But
that is building roads in Iraq by any chance?
I don't know. I think it's in Illinois somewhere.
Oh, okay.
But anyway,
I'm sorry.
I'd love to see you do a segment on the Carlyle Group sometime.
Okay. I have in the past, and we're going to have Greg Pallast on tomorrow, and he's become kind of a junior expert on the Carlyle Group, so I just made a note to myself to bring that up with him. So be sure and listen tomorrow, and I'm pretty sure tomorrow we're going to have him on.
Listen, you've got such a great show. I appreciate your show so much.
You have got
the ability to get the message out, and, you know, I believe that finally there's a chink in the Bush armor. And I believe it's time to jump on them, and I think we need to take the gloves off and get after these people while we have a chance. And I appreciate your show. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Jim. I would add to that I think that it's important to do that to the extent that it is done in the context of what's best for the United States of America, what's best for democracy in this country. And I understand where you're coming from, Jim. And I think that it's important that we look at the situation, we look at the facts, we look at the history, which so many people are missing. And I'm talking about the history going back to the 1600s. You know, how did this country come about? What were the founders' ideas? What brought democracy? Why did, after 7,000 years of civilization, when humans were ruled either by popes, theocrats, kings, warlords, or feudal states, the rich, ruled by the rich, feudalism, why all of a sudden, after 7,000 years of relative stability civilization-wise with these three types of governance, did Jefferson and Adams and Hamilton and Madison and Washington, out of seemingly nowhere, I mean, you know, with a little bit of guidance from the Greeks back in Athens, but keep in mind, the Greeks didn't hold elections. The Athenian democracy was a lottery. It was like jury duty. Your name came up, you had to serve. You had to show up. You had to be in the polis for 1 year. And those people who refused to serve or couldn't serve were called the idiota, which is where our word idiot comes from in part. But in any case, why did these guys do this? Where did they get this idea from? And of course, as you know, Jim, you've listened to the show for quite a while. We've done this in some depth. For those folks who are new to the show, we will be covering these things as time goes on. And because I think that it's important that we must understand, we must really understand what democracy means, what it means to live in a constitutionally limited representative republic, representative democratic republic. What does that mean? How can we make it work? And how is it being harmed by these extremists? Particularly on the conservative side. There are those on the left who I think are harming democracy too, and I have not been at all reluctant to point it out when they do. But the real and present danger, in my opinion, to democracy in the United States, to the future. And it's not just democracy in the United States. It's the future of democracy all around the world. Keep in mind, in 89, I was in Beijing in 86, so it must have been 89. In Tiananmen Square, when 15,000 people marched, many of them to their death or to their imprisonment, they were carrying a 36-foot-tall papier-mâché statue of liberty, a replica of the Statue of Liberty. They called her the goddess of democracy. And we are not, it's not just about America. We are the beacon for the world in many regards. And it is so sad to me, frankly, how on 9/11, the entire world, I mean, there were demonstrations on the streets in Baghdad in support of the United States on 9/11. The entire world turned out. The headline in Le Monde, the French newspaper, said, "We are all Americans now." In French, of course, it said it. And we have squandered that. We could have so easily said, okay, we've got this problem. We've got these terrorists. They are criminals. Let's go after them like they are criminals, like the Germans did after the Red Brigade. Let's go after the Italians after the Red Brigade. Let's go after them. No, but instead we declared a never-ending war and stripped ourselves of civil liberties and handed the president all this power. And look what he's done with it. It's devastating America. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense and the radical middle. I'll be right back.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day. Don't like the sound of that?
Tough. You got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when. Questions. They're the anti-drug.
Call 1-800-729-6686 for more information. Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Have you tried Maxwell House's freshest coffee ever? Today, Maxwell House, and only Maxwell House, comes with the unique Fresh Seal. Fresh Seal locks flavor and aroma in the coffee. To top it off, Maxwell House's easy open can lets you enjoy that fresh taste without a can opener. For freshness you can taste, choose Maxwell House. It's our freshest coffee ever, and a great way to make every day good to the last drop.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
I have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector.
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why don't
me?
I put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
What are we gonna do with all these criminals? What are we gonna do about all these crimes? Where are we gonna put all this anger? Such a strange wind blowing and such strange, strange times.
Our military is powerful. The functions of our government continue without interruption. Our objectives are clear. And our solutions, our operations are proceeding according to plan.
Crushed. Down the road I hear a dark, dark clamor. Feet are wet.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the Democracy Zone. Samuel Prescott Bush. Samuel Prescott Bush. In 1918, made the first Bush fortune on World War I. He was a supplier of steel and small arms, mostly steel parts, to Remington. And Remington supplied 75% of the weapons for both sides in World War I. And he was also the chief of ordnance, small arms, and the ammunition system, section of the War Industries Board. So he served on the government agency that bought the products that he himself made. This was Samuel Prescott Bush back in 1918. The records of his dealings with the Remington Arms Company were burned. And his son, Prescott Sheldon Bush, on October 20th of 1942, World War II, the United States government, under the Trading with the Enemy Act, ordered the seizure of Nazi German banking operations in New York City that were being conducted by Prescott Bush. The U.S. Alien Property Custodian seized Union Banking Corporation's stock shares, all of which were owned by Prescott Bush, Averill Harriman, three Nazi executives, and two other associates of Bush. Prescott Bush was involved in a deal with William Stamps Farish, the Standard Oil Company, and the IG Farben Company to finance and build a camp in Europe named Auschwitz. His son, George Herbert Walker Bush, two-time congressman from Texas, twice lost Senate races, and until the vice presidency was appointed to high offices, very often he allowed himself to be referred to as the former ambassador to China. He was not. He was the U.S. trade representative to China. In other words, he was the person who was there to represent the interests of large multinational American corporations like Walmart and Nike who wanted to buy from China. He was, when he was the head of the CIA, one of his main jobs was to run Manuel Noriega. He was Noriega's boss. Noriega, of course, was a graduate of the School of the Americas on the CIA payroll from the mid-60s to the mid-80s. Bush's successor at the CIA took Noriega off the payroll, and when Bush became vice president, he put Noriega back on the payroll for a while. George Bush, of course, was involved with the Iran-Contra affair. He pardoned the defendants before he left office. Some of the Iran-Contra criminals, Poindexter particularly, have served in the Bush Jr. administration. He also pardoned Armin Hammer, who was involved with Soviet leaders since Lenin. Actually, I'm not sure that Armin Hammer was such a bad guy, but in 1975, Armin Hammer pleaded guilty to laundering $75,000 to Nixon's reelection war chest. He pleaded, pardoned Ted Olson, the current Solicitor General. Ted Olson, the current Solicitor General, was Hammer's liaison to Bush in getting the pardon. And, of course, he has strong connections to the Carlyle Group, including James Baker III, became a senior advisor to Carlyle's Asia Partners in 1998. And we're speaking of George Herbert Walker Bush. Carlyle helped enrich the Bin Laden family. Bin Laden family members were in a conference with Baker and other Carlyle officials on 9/11. The family was whisked away without being questioned by the FBI, as we discussed earlier, and Carlyle bought the Bin Laden holdings right after 9/11 to avoid further embarrassment. And then we get to Neil, Marvin, John Ellis, Jeb, Columbia, Noel, and George P. and George W. Some interesting histories here. But what does this have to do with 9/11? What does this have to do with the war on terror? Let me pull it all together for you in just a minute. And this isn't conspiracy nut stuff. This is stuff you can find in any good history archive. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Uncommon Sense.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton. Following months of contract talks, union employees of the phone giant Verizon will have a chance to vote on a tentative new contract. Two unions representing nearly 80,000 Verizon workers reached the five-year deal late Thursday.
Given the hard positions that the parties had staked out at the beginning of the talks, we think we gained all our major objectives in this contract.
Jim Spillane is director of the Journal and Media Department at the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. He says the tentative contract will maintain solid health coverage for workers and will protect their job security.
And that was something that we just saw as a real bedrock issue in this. We just felt we could not give in on that. And we feel very good that we were able to keep that language and keep those protections in place.
On the downside, the union failed to secure an agreement that would have made it easier to organize workers in Verizon's wireless division. If approved, the contract would also freeze wages in its first year.
The Bush administration calls it an improving jobs picture, but the August decline in the national unemployment rate from 6.2 to 6.1% does not bring good news. A net 93,000 jobs were lost during the month, and the losses were not confined just to one area. 28,000 professional and business service jobs disappeared, and the ice-cold tech sector dropped another 16,000.
A federal employees union loses its latest bid to win collective bargaining rights for the nation's baggage screeners. In January, Transportation Security Administration Chief James Loy stripped the screeners of their full union rights, and on Friday, a federal district court judge dismissed a lawsuit brought by the American Federation of Government Employees challenging that decision. The case now heads back to the Federal Labor Relations Authority, which has already ruled once against the union.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
We'll be right back.
the best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Propagandy, propagandy. Try and convince the folks that beach is never sandy. You can convert into lies what they've seen with their own eyes. It's amazing. Propagandy.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Is this any way to fight a war on terror? Is the third George to be president of the U.S. making the same mistake as did Britain's King George III? If you'd like to drop into our chat room, by the way, go to liberaltalkradio.com and click on the links, or tomhartmanshow.com will get you there as well. And let's see. We were continuing along here. I remember some years ago, this was, must have been, well, frankly, I don't remember how long ago, more than 8 or 9 years ago. I was in Denver, Colorado, and or might have been Boulder. I was in one of those two cities, and with a friend or a business associate who lived in Colorado. And we were driving out through this real uppy, you know, very tony section of town, and it was actually kind of out in a rural area. And we went past a country club. And it was a beautiful sunny day, and the country club was all, you know, super spiffy, and the houses around in the neighborhood were all, you know, million-dollar houses. And he points out this house as we're driving by and says, you see that place? And he had taken me on a little bit of a detour to show this to him. He says, look at that house. It's beautiful. And he says, that's Neil Bush's house. He got that as part of the deal with the Silverado, he said. I don't know the details of this, but Neil was on the Silverado board of directors, and he endorsed a loan of over $100 million to partners who were investing in his oil ventures. In other words, indirectly giving loans to himself. He convinced Silverado to forgive an $11.5 million debt from another investor in his company. And when Silverado sank, this one SNL, you and I bailed it out to the tune of $1 billion. You know, part of the taxes that you pay every time your paycheck gets dinged are going to pay for the SNL bailout. It is still part of our debt. John Ellis, also known as Jeb Bush, successfully lobbied his father's administration to parole a Cuban national, Orlando Bosch, who had fired a bazooka on a Polish freighter in Miami Harbor and had masterminded many bombings, including the bombing of a Cuban airliner. Jeb and partner Armando Codina got in trouble with savings and loan Broward Festival. Are we seeing a pattern here? Loaned money through a third party to purchase a building when Broward Festival failed and the loan went into default. Jeb and Codina were allowed to keep the building and reduce their liability on the loan from $4.5 million down to $500,000. And it goes on. Miguel Recari ran international medical centers. He paid Jeb $75,000 after he made calls to the Department of Health and Human Services to get IMC a waiver on Medicare regulations. Recari was indicted for the largest Medicare fraud in history. Skipped bail in 87 and now lives in Spain. And Jeb made it possible. And, of course, we have George W. In 1972, he was arrested for cocaine. This was expunged from his records, but he did do community service for it, and that is something that he actually brags about. The Harkin Energy, financed in part by the Bin Laden family, helped create a Cayman Island tax dodge involved in tricky accounting. Sold $848,000 worth of stock before the market crashed. Now, what does all this have to do with all this? People say, you know, what is going on with 9/11 and what's going on with Iraq? Why is this happening? Why did we invade Iraq? If you go, I think that there's three things at work here, and it's really important to understand the genesis of all three of them. One, you've got just good old fashioned greed. Greed and power. The two of the of your basic, I think that they're two of the deadly sins, the seven deadly sins, and in essence, it is that about a third of that $1 billion a week, that we are spending in Iraq is going to private for-profit corporations, and the vast majority of it on a no-bid guaranteed profit basis. Now, I started a lot of businesses in my life, and I'll tell you, nobody has ever come to me and said, if you'll start a business, I'll guarantee you a profit. And you're not going to have to compete with anybody. But that's the deal that Dick Cheney made sure Halliburton got in Iraq. And just renewed. So, and of course, Halliburton is one of the major, and Halliburton and Associates are the major contributors to the Republican campaigns. And so you've got this dog chasing its tail situation where you've got, you know, wealthy folks and very large, very wealthy corporations contributing money to Bush and Cheney and crowd, who then funnel cash in the form of government contracts to these folks so that they can make more money, so that they can more, you know, it's no surprise that George Bush is going to raise $250 million for his election campaign in 2004 to try and get actually elected as president of the United States for the first time. It's no surprise. He's making so much money for these folks that it's just a small payback. It should be easy. I mean, he has literally handed $1 trillion to the wealthy in America. $1.6 trillion is the Congressional Budget Office's estimate, you know, over time. So anyhow, we've got, you know, good old-fashioned greed. And that's the one that some people point, you know, Dennis Kucinich in the debates the other night, he says, no more sweetheart deals for Halliburton. And everybody bursts into applause. And frankly, if that's all it was, it wouldn't concern me so much. Because that's the sort of thing that you can eventually expose. And, I mean, you know, this is not that different, frankly, from the Ulysses S. Grant administration, which prior to the current Bush administration was the most corrupt presidential administration in the history of the United States. Ulysses S. Grant was so corrupt that his own Republican Party refused to renominate him for a third term, even though he wanted to run. And they were called the railroad bribery scandals. And so many officials in his administration had to resign. And, I mean, there was just scandal after scandal after scandal. And they all had basically to do with people in government doing favors for big corporations who then in turn gave money to people in government. As we see right now. I mean, it's just, you know, it's recycling. It's going over and over and over again. In fact, there was a thing in the paper today. I don't have it right at my fingertips. Thought maybe I did. Anyhow, I don't. You know, about these two guys at the EPA who just gutted the clean air regulations. And then, surprise, this week, they get jobs with the Southern Company and with another group that deals, you know, the Southern Company, one of the largest Republican donors and one of the largest polluters of the air in the United States. So, anyhow, you've got this good old-fashioned greed situation. But the other two things that are going on concern me even more. And the first is the possibility of creeping fascism, of incipient fascism. If you look at the American Heritage Dictionary in 1987, defined fascism as the merger of business and state interests combined with belligerent nationalism. Benito Mussolini, when he came up with the word, said that in his opinion, the idea was, he thought he was inventing something new. He really wasn't. But in his opinion, he said, fascism should really be called corporatism for its emerging of corporate and state interests. And the word came from this bundle that was the symbol of Roman power, the Roman Empire power, a bundle of sticks with a rope around it with an axe sticking out of the top, which was called the fasciae. And the theory was, one stick you can break. If you bundle a whole bunch of them together, you can't break it. It creates this powerful union. And Mussolini pointed this out. He wrote the Italian encyclopedia's entry on fascism back in the 1930s, in which he pointed this out. He said it really should be called corporatism. And the whole fascist mindset, the whole fascist notion, has to do with a paranoid worldview, a worldview that says that power is the core of everything, and that we have to have power over others, the threat of violence type of power. And see, there's a lot of different kinds of power, but the threat of violence power is the ascendant one. This is the big one. And that one of the ways to create a government that is unassailable, that nobody is going to go after, is to combine the corporate interest and the government interest, that this will be very powerful. And he was right. It will produce great power, but it is anti-democratic. This is completely anathema to what the United States was founded on. The Boston Tea Party was actually in response to a reduction in the tax on tea, the Tea Act of 1773, that was going to allow the East India Company to pull a Walmart, to wipe out all the small tea companies on the East Coast. The American Patriots said, no, we will not have it. It ain't going to happen here. We are not going to tolerate this. And they committed what in today's dollars would be a $1 million act of vandalism. And so our country was founded on the idea that corporations should be separate from government. And it was a crime in most places for corporations to participate with government. Corporations had a limited lifespan. They could only do one thing at a time. It was illegal. It was a felony in most states for corporations to own stock in other corporations, you know, right on down the line. And now we've seen this rise of corporate power to the point that it has infiltrated government to the point that our president and our vice president are corporate CEOs with no background in the law, no background in government, but background, you know, I mean, Bush, when he first came to office, he said, we're going to run this government like a corporation. And you can see the disaster that that has produced in many regards. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, if you have thoughts on this. David in San Francisco is on the line. David, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Good show, as usual. And
I just was going
through my email here. I noticed that there's going to be a series of demonstrations coming up here in California regarding the genetically modified foods industry starting tomorrow, it looks like. So we've got a constant barrage of these corporations trying to buy up everything that God and nature created. And since the average person, first of all, can't believe that these things can be sold, they're somewhat dumbstruck when it happens. And then when it's finally the payment comes due. Like, for example, did you happen to catch the Now program on Saturday night, Bill Moyer?
I did. It was a brilliant demonstration of the fallacy of globalization.
Yeah, and for the listeners that didn't catch it, the Ganges River in India apparently has just been sold to a French company, so that now all of the water in the Ganges River, the famous old Ganges River that all the mendicants and Hindus go to pray to the god of life, now they have that's all been bought. I'll tell you,
privatized, they call it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Corporatized is the real word.
Sure. And I mean, like I was saying, you know, most people can't believe. They think that this is just, you know, figment of someone's imagination. But the reality is now all of the water in a river has been bought by some company, and you know, how much did they pay for that river? I mean, that's the most amazing thing. I remember reading a famous old book. I think it was called The Origins of the American Revolution. And in it, they describe back before the American Revolution, there was a guy that bribed Governor Morris of New York, but he bribed the governor of New York $500 to essentially have the deed to everything which is now Vermont. And, I mean, it was a fantastic amount of land for a measly amount of money. And even though most of the people who were on that land fought it in the courts and won their stuff back, the guy still was able to run away with about 80% of the land because it was uninhabited. And it took years. I think it took something like well into 1850 before all of those land claims were resolved against this guy. But or his family by that point, you know, because it was over 100 years worth of land claims that had to get fought in the courts in order to get their property back or to get it back into the public domain.
Yeah, this is a symptom of this exact thing, and you know, thank you for pointing that out. I appreciate your call. Let me read to you real quickly here from an actual every state in the reason why the word corporation does not exist in the United States Constitution is because this is very interesting. Jefferson, when the Constitution was first presented in 1787, Madison sent a copy of it to Jefferson, who was then in Paris, And Jefferson read it and said, we have to have an explicit Bill of Rights. And Madison responded saying, the rights of humans are understood. Everybody here understands them. And Madison and Jefferson replied again saying, well, we have to do this for future generations who may forget that our idea of government was this radical new innovation, that the rights come not from the government, like in kingdoms, theocracies, and in feudal states, where the rights are held by those in power and they distribute rights to the average person, but instead the rights in our form of government that we're going to create are held by we the people. And that every institution that we the people create, whether it's a corporation, whether it's a union, whether it's a nonprofit organization, whether it's a military contractor, whether it's a government itself, every institution that we create only has privileges. And those privileges are defined by we, the holders of the rights. And so in every state in the union, and Jefferson said that he wanted a constitutional amendment. He came up with the original 10 Bill of Rights. And two of them ended up getting dropped, and what is now the 6th, 7th, and 8th Amendment got stretched into three. It was originally one. Trial by jury, speedy trial, and right to make bail. But Jefferson wanted there to be a part of the Bill of Rights written right into the Constitution that there would be, and I quote, I use his language, a ban on all corporate monopolies, end quote, which meant corporations could not own stock in other corporations, corporations could not combine together corporations. And, for example, here, this is from the Wisconsin law back then. No corporation doing business in this state shall pay or contribute or offer consent or agree or pay or to contribute directly or indirectly any money, property, free service of its officers or employees or thing of value to any political party, organization, committee, or individual for any political purpose whatsoever or on the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind. Take over America, and we have to get it back. We have to acknowledge that we have this problem. Then we'll get into the third thing perhaps tomorrow. I'll be back in just a minute. Hang on, we'll be right back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Hi, I'm Hunter Ellis, and I want to tell you about my new series, Tactical to Practical.
Tactical to what?
To practical.
Shows have to rhyme now?
No. It's a show about how military technology goes civilian.
Some ex-Navy dolphins cleaned my pool once.
Really?
Yes, only 5 fish a day. Everything was going swimmingly until a Navy SEAL showed up.
Watch Tactical to Practical this Tuesday night at 9, 8 Central, only on the History Channel. And don't worry, Gilbert's not in it.
What?
When I wear black, even a little dandruff shows, and my old dandruff shampoo just wasn't doing enough. I still had flakes, and my scalp felt dry and itchy. So I switched to Celsin Blue Moisturizing Shampoo with aloe and moisturizers.
Doctor-recommended Celsin Blue has a proven ingredient to relieve dandruff, plus it keeps hair and scalp healthy and itch-free.
If your dandruff shampoo can't handle black, do what I did. Switch to Celsin Blue Moisturizing Shampoo.
Never wear black without the blue. Celsin Blue. Use as directed.
It's new. It's a new choice. And it's here now. It's new Levitra. Levitra Vardenafil HCL. And it's time to ask your doctor. Levitra. It's new. It's news. And it's available by prescription only. So find out about Levitra. Call 1-866-LEVITRA. Visit Levitra.com or talk to your doctor about the new choice. New Levitra. Call 1-866-LEVITRA.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Hartman Show.
Joining us now is Jason Campbell with the Christian Action Network.
Well, since 1991, the gay movement has gone down to Disney to do these gay days. You've had events where you've had Mickey Mouse with Goofy in sexual positions.
Ah! Homosexual movies are shown on the Disney transportation systems. And what kind of movies, for God's sake, do they show on these buses?
Triple X.
Oh, you're kidding.
If a child's riding beside one of the buses and looks up and says, Daddy, what is that on the television monitor?
Right.
It's going to be an embarrassing moment.
Oh, it'll be worse than embarrassing. The child will be scarred for life.
Right. That's what the homosexuals want.
Well, I know. They're after the kid. Now, the only thing I'm afraid of is somebody just tuned in the program and never heard the program before and just went, oh, Jesus, this guy is really a right-wing freak.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, live coast to coast. And I was ranting about the law in Wisconsin that said basically that any corporate officer or person who tried to give money to a politician or to influence an election in any way could go to prison for years. And our digital line, I'm broadcasting live here from the People's Republic of Vermont and in the network studios in Detroit. The digital line burped for a moment. I guess some of you heard a hiccup there. My apologies. Anyhow, we have Richard in Santa Fe has called 1-800-TALK-YES. Richard, you're on the program. You're live and on the air. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Tom. Back in 1952, I was a young fighter pilot, and I went over to Korea. And the squadron that we replaced, or the fighter group, was the 36th Air National Guard of Texas. Oh, and let me tell you, those guys did a wonderful job. So some outfits in the National Guard do go overseas. However, Bush's outfit was flying air defense. I think it was the F-102 or the 106, and that airplane was never going to go out of the country. So I just wanted to stand up a little bit for the Air National Guard. I was not in the National Guard. But some of their outfits are very good. They're an awful lot of experience in those outfits. So
yeah.
That's all I have to say on that subject.
Great. Okay.
I enjoy your
Thank
program,
you,
Tom.
Thanks. Thanks for enlightening us. I want to be on the record as having tremendous respect for our military and for the National Guard. And anybody who is willing to serve their nation. In fact, we got in a food fight about this a couple of months ago on this program. I think that we should have a draft. And I think that we should have compulsory national service. And I believe that because I lived in a country for a year where they had that, and I saw it as a really positive thing. I think that we need rites of passage, and our kids don't have those. And I lived in Germany for a year, 86, 87, and when you graduated from high school, you had a choice. You could do 2 years in the Army or you could do 2 years of volunteer work. And there was this huge volunteer network all over the country of people helping out in hospitals, people helping plant forests, people helping feed sick people, homeless people. It's remarkable, and it created a great social good. And it was this very, very positive. And we knew several families who had young men who had to go through that experience. And I think it was a very, very positive one. Tomorrow we'll get to the third thing that I think is so dangerous. It's represented by this idea of Pax Americana, of empire. And I think this is the real concern here. And we'll get into that in some detail. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense in the radical middle. Our program today produced by Louise Hartman and Joe McPherson, and Char Jones running the board. Thank you all. We'll see you tomorrow. Same place, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Tom Roberts. Indiana Governor Frank O'Bannon is in critical condition at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago. Doctors say he suffered a cerebral hemorrhage. Governor spokeswoman Mary Dieter says the governor's chief of staff broke the news to the governor's aides.
He implored each of us to continue to do the state's business because he said that's what the governor would want us to do. And then because we don't know about his condition, he also asked us all to pray if we do believe in a higher power.
Dieter says Indiana Lieutenant Governor Joe Kernan plans to head back to Indiana but would not provide further details. Calling Iraq the central front in the global war against terrorism, President Bush will soon ask Congress for $87 billion earmarked for efforts in Iraq and Afghanistan. Terry Moore reports.
In a speech to the nation from the White House, President Bush argued that the terror war will continue to be difficult and costly, yet worthy of the nation and critical to U.S. security. With tensions and casualties rising in Iraq, the president blamed backers of ousted Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein and terrorist groups coming into Iraq.
The terrorists have a strategic goal. They want